Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
You're the best! We're the beautiful! We're the only!
Welcome to the Back in Time podcast. This is episode 34, and I'm joined on the episode by Phantom Dark Dave. You can follow him on Twitter. Dave, how you doing today, man?
Doing good, man. How are you?
I'm great. Box of fluffy ducks.
Okay. That sounds magical.
Yeah. It's an old Roddy Piper line.
I should have caught it then.
There you go.
Well, so, I got my kilt on. Does that count?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to jumping into The Sandlot. We had a good time on the teaser trailer, so I've been looking forward to getting into the full movie. It'd been a little while since I watched the actual movie. When's the last time you saw it previous to rewatching it for this?
Like a decade.
Wow.
Like I remembered it really well, but I will tell you the experience of rewatching it as an adult is mind-blowing.
Yeah. So you feel like it's held up pretty well?
Yeah, but I feel like, and we'll get into this, but I think I appreciate it more now than I did then.
Okay, great. Yeah, we'll definitely jump into that as we discuss. I want to take a second to thank our sponsor, Bunny 17 Media. Bunny 17 Media is an independent publisher that is home to a variety of books, comic books, graphic novels, and more for children, teens, and adults. Check out my personal favorite by them, How to Quit Being an Asshole in 5 Easy Steps. It's the perfect gag gift or birthday present. Use promo code BACKINTIME at checkout and save 15% off your entire order. That's for only our listeners. Again, bunny17media.com, promo code BACKINTIME. Get yourself 15% off. I also want to thank you guys for hitting the download button on the episode. Please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. That's going to help us grow the podcast. And as always, we're on social media at Back in Time Pod. And Dave, why don't you plug your show real quick as well?
Absolutely. So Phantom Dark Dave, I got the new podcast out there just called Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. On Twitter, that's just Dave_podcast. Similar to what the guys do here, I do a lot of things with video games and TV shows, things that really just stay true to the 90s for us, and then I kind of bounce around through decades of science fiction, anything pop culture. So basically, if I like it, I talk about it.
And I'm a big fan of the show too, and hopefully I'm going to be on there pretty soon.
I would say sooner than you think.
Awesome. So I thought we had a great first episode. The teaser trailer is now up on iTunes. So if you haven't listened to that yet, go back and listen to that episode first. Baseball season's underway, man. This episode drops in April, so I know you're not a big sports guy, but do you have a team that you follow or one that you used to like back in the day?
I'm like a secret sports guy. So when people are like, hey, are you a sports guy? Like, nah, man. But if you put me in that zone or you get me out of my day-to-day rut, I can become a sports guy because deep down I used to play sports. I understand sports. I appreciate sports. And yeah, man, like I'm a hockey guy first. I'm a Dallas Stars hockey guy. Always nice. Have been. But you know what? Baseball's number two. So that's why this is perfect.
I got to tag you in this photo. One of my buddies just went to a Blackhawks game and his, like, I think his son's like maybe 10 years old. He's wearing a Blackhawks shirt, but it's Garth from Wayne's World on the front of it.
That's perfect.
Like, that is the best shirt I've ever seen. And there's also one with Wayne as well. I'm just like, I have to get that shirt.
Yeah. So it seems like that'd be a good one for like, you and your kid too, you know, just kind of,
oh yeah,
he's with me, she's with me type, you know, that whole scenario.
Mm-hmm. Fun. Yeah, my cousin does screen printing. So she actually made me a shirt for last year. We went to a White Sox game. I had a shirt on that says, "You're killing me, Smalls." And then he had on one on that just said Smalls.
Oh, so. That's who you're talking to. There you go.
There you go. Yeah, worked out perfect. But yeah, I mean, I think this movie really got me in the mood for the season. I'm looking forward to like making it to a game or two and, you know, maybe watching a few on TV. They're not the funnest thing to sit there and watch a baseball game for 3 hours, but I love to go tailgate and take one in. If I can go sit in the stadium, it's a lot funner for me.
It also helps if you like hot dogs.
Yep. So let's jump into some intro of The Sandlot here. We'll just dive in feet first here. So The Sandlot is a 1993 American coming-of-age baseball film co-written, directed, and narrated by David Mickey Evans. I didn't know he was a narrator until rewatching it. And the film tells the story of a group of young baseball players during the summer of 1962. It stars Tom Gary, Mike Vitar, Karen Allen, Dennis Leary, and James Earl Jones. The filming locations were in Glendale, Midvale, Salt Lake City, and Ogden, Utah. It grossed $33 million worldwide and has become a bit of a cult film. So filming took place over 42 days, so pretty lengthy shoot compared to some of our horror movies we've reviewed that were like 18, 20-day shoots. They actually had some time with this one. What was your first... I know we talked a little bit about this on the teaser trailer, but I guess what's your first impression of The Sandlot and kind of your intro to the film?
Yeah, so going back, it's just, you know, getting a copy of it on a VHS clamshell, putting it in, and not being a part of a ragtag baseball team. This was kind of like my first exposure of, wow, yeah, kids can play ball and kids can be really good at ball, and, you know, making it authentic as possible, baseball can be really fun. Mm-hmm. And so I think this was one of those movies where when you watched it, you believed in yourself that you could do just that. Like after watching this movie, even as an adult, I was like, hell, I could be Benny the Jet Rodriguez.
I don't think I could be Benny the Jet. I think the dog would have got me in like within 10 feet in the chase. It just would have mauled me.
The dog was like 10 feet. So
part of the movie was inspired by director writer David Mickey Evans' childhood. With his brother, some of the older boys wouldn't let Evans play baseball with him. When they lost a ball over a brick wall, he thought he could get on their good side by retrieving it for them. When he hopped the wall, however, he found a giant dog named Hercules waiting for him, and he was bitten. I thought that was a pretty cool, interesting fact. Did you know any of that backstory?
I did not. That's amazing. That always goes to show you where a writer's, you know, inspiration usually comes from somewhere a little closer to home.
Yep. The casting directors originally wanted the kids to be about 9 or 10 years old, but as they began casting, it became obvious real fast the kids were much too young. Evans told Sports Illustrated, so I said, we've got to make them 12 or 13. We knew it was the right decision instantly because the first kid we interview was Mike Vitar, who played Benny the Jet Rodriguez. We're going to get into some casting and get into Mike Vitar's background, but I found that interesting that he was the first one that was interviewed and pretty much casted.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those beginner's luck, maybe. I mean, right out of the bat, you get your star of the film. That doesn't happen often.
Right. We're going to jump into some interesting facts, even though I've already been dropping a few of them here. So in order to establish the close bond between Smalls and Benny, the director had actors Tom Gary and Mike Vitar meet and rehearse together weeks before the rest of the cast showed up to film. It worked so well that the other kids genuinely believe the two actors had been friends for a long time. I think that really shows when you rewatch the movie. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. There's definitely a brotherhood between these two characters. And, you know, on purpose, there's scenes where they look at each other and give each other the thumbs up or just like a silent stare for a moment.
Yeah.
But you feel like the warmth of your heart to know that like those guys are friends for life. And who knows, man, that was all built just off of just a few weeks of getting to know each other. They would, you know, click so well.
Speaking of brotherhood, the older and younger Benny are played by real life brothers Pablo Vitar and Mike Vitar. So Pablo being the end of the movie when the jet steals home. I thought they looked similar. I was like, dang, that's good casting.
Oh, that's what I thought too. I was like, oh man, how did they do that? But that, man. So
quite a big age difference too. Because I would say my guess would be Pablo had to be at least like late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
The vomit that was used in the ride scene was made from split pea soup baked beans, oatmeal, and a little water in some movie gel. They use paintball guns to discharge it, and they actually nailed a few people in real life by accident. The chewing tobacco was made from beef jerky and licorice. That sounds disgusting. Any thoughts on the vomit that they used?
Yeah, so, and it's funny too, when I was watching it, I was looking and I was like, that does kind of look like beef jerky, and I don't chew tobacco.
Right.
But I was thinking, they're sure taking really big bites though, mm-hmm. also.
Yeah, I remember being in college and one of my friends doing what they call dipping. Again, I'm not a tobacco guy either, but I was just like, why is it so small? He's just like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, the Sandlot looked really big.
Like, oh, he's cool.
Just like, oh, no, dude, that's from like the 60s. You know, none of us knew that was actually beef jerky. So we just all thought it was just used to make tobacco really long and stringy looking. Now, here's an interesting fact. I know you're going to love this one. Brandon, Quinton Adams, and Mike Vitar also starred together in a movie that I know you're going to want to be a part of when we review it. D2, The Mighty Ducks.
Yes, sir. That's when watching this, that crossed my mind so many times.
Good. You know, I didn't pick up on Brandon Quinton Adams right away. And then when he started talking, I was like, oh, that's Cake Eater.
That's right.
It took a second, but I was like, oh, that's who that is.
Yeah, it's a little boy from People Under the Stairs.
Yep. Here's another one I think you'll love. The Vincent drugstore that is seen when Smalls first goes to the Sandlot was also used 5 years earlier in a movie that is a sequel. And I'll give you a hint. It's the fourth movie in the franchise. And we've got one coming out later this year from the same franchise. Can you think of the name?
Oh, yeah. That's Halloween 4.
Halloween 4. Absolutely. It's when Rachel and her friend take Jamie to pick out a costume. And it was also used the next year in Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, in the scene where the man in the black steps off a bus and makes his way through town. So I thought that was a cool little tie-in and one that I did not notice.
Can I throw one your way?
Yeah, go for it.
So this is a little far-fetched, but this is kind of how I am. So the writer-director of this film, his next movie that he did was First Kid, which I absolutely love.
Ooh, with Sinbad.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the main character, the kid in that, actually played in Mighty Ducks 1. He played the young Gordon Bombay. So there's another Mighty Ducks tie-in for you.
I love it. Nice. All the Sandlot kids are wearing PF Flyers or Converse Chuck Taylors throughout the movie. I thought that was a nice little thing to add in there, since the PF Flyers play a big role in the final scene. Also, Ham Porter's famous line, "You're killing me, Smalls," is a paraphrase of a famous quote, "They're killing me out there, Whitey," spoken by Denver Broncos coach Lou Saban. The line was also paraphrased the previous year in another baseball-themed film, A League of Their Own. So how about that? Two of the best baseball movies ever taking a line from the old Denver Broncos coach.
There you go.
Love it. Let's talk about some casting, and then we'll get into the full review. So we'll start. Actually, let's start with Mike Vitar. And he plays the role of Benny the Jet Rodriguez. Obviously, we're going to talk about him in a future episode. But what do you think of Mike Vitar here as Benny the Jet?
I thought he was a perfect cast, man. I know his character is really well written anyway. But he brings it to life, and he really becomes that kid that I kind of wish we all had the chance of meeting, whether you were popular or not. I think he has the right attitude. I mean, even, and we'll get into this, but even right away when no one else accepts Smalls, he right away just, you know, doesn't belittle him, doesn't, you know, hold anything against him. He just says, hey, there's a kid who looks like he wants to play. Let's give him a chance no right. matter what. And with the things that are going on in the world today, there needs to be more of that.
Have you ever looked at what Mike Vitar is up to now since he left acting in 1997?
Because he is a Mighty Duck, I have definitely checked out his resume to see that it didn't really blossom very much. So he did a few things. And then I think I read that he was doing, is it a firefighter at one point in time? But then I think he got himself into some trouble.
He sure did.
So.
Yeah, he beat somebody up pretty viciously. So he didn't end up going to jail. He dodged that part of it. But I think he lost his job, probably.
I wonder if he used a baseball bat.
Well, let's talk about Tom Geary. Also has had his trouble with the law in the later years, but he plays Scotty Smalls. What do you think of Smalls?
Another great cast, man. He was so believable as kind of the new kid on the block, you know, the new boy next door. And he was very shy and he just wanted a friend. And you could tell, we'll get into this, but his mom just tried to build his confidence for him. And it took somebody like Benny to kind of open him up. And once he did, he became a valuable part of the team.
Yeah, definitely. He's had a pretty lengthy career. He's still acting. He was just recently in Wonder Wheel. And he also did a baseball movie just a couple years later called The Last Home Run that I've never seen. But I have an interest in checking out because I'd like to see how he followed up Sandlot.
Yeah, I mean, there could be a reference in there just waiting to be found.
I'll do a couple more casts. This is a huge cast here, but one more kid. Let's talk about Patrick Renna. He's been a couple of my favorite movies growing up. He plays Hamilton Ham Porter. What do you think of Patrick Renna?
Oh, he is amazing. He is hilarious.
What's your favorite Patrick Renna movie?
Oof. You know, believe it or not, Sandlot's tied with The Big Green. I think that he's perfect in both movies.
Yep.
But he's equally entertaining as an adult because he still keeps kind of that BS humor. And I've actually seen him in a few horror movies. So,
yeah. I had one back in the day. It was, what was that film series that came out?
Like, I knew it. Dark Ride.
Yeah, Dark Ride. But the film series. Eight Films to Die For. There you go.
Yep.
Yeah, I bought like two of them and then I was like, oh my gosh, that's Ham. And like, it just happened to kind of fall into place there. But yeah, I love him in Big Green. I think he's great in that. But I really like him in Son-in-Law with Pauly Shore.
Oh my God, yes. Yes.
That's a good one with him. Let's get to some of the older cast here. We'll just do two here. James Earl Jones as Mr. Myrtle. James Earl, obviously best known for being the voice of Darth Vader in the Star Wars franchise. What would you think of James Earl Jones here as the blind Mr. Myrtle?
I loved it. He, for the kids to first see him, he poses as that, you know, someone you could be afraid of because he's such a giant guy.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you realize he's just lighthearted and he's fun. And I love that about him. And that voice. Oh, man, he's got the voice.
Do you prefer him in The Sandlot or do you like him better in Field of Dreams?
I don't think there's a losing situation, but I'll just go Sandlot because gave away that ball. I mean, he doesn't get much more nicer than that, right? He bailed that kid out.
I've got a lot of interesting facts on the ball when we get into that.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I think he's had an interesting career because he's known as like an on-screen guy, but he's also like voiced two of the most iconic movies of all time, Star Wars. And then on the kid side, he's the voice of Mufasa in The Lion King, which was a giant hit. I had no idea who he was, the voice of Mufasa, but he's going to be in the upcoming one in 2019 that's coming out. And that's going to be directed by Jon Favreau. They're kind of rebooting.
I am ready to take this shot. I have never said this before. I have never seen The Lion King.
Wow. Okay.
I know. I spent so much time watching non-children movies that I missed a lot of children's movies. I just so happened to see The Sandlot.
Yeah, I'll give you a pass. I mean, not every teenager was going to go watch The Lion King. I think it was really for like a younger audience, because at that point, you're probably, that's 80, 94, so that you're over 10 years old at that point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you a pass.
Yay.
The last casting I wanted to talk about was Karen Allen, who is just credited as Mom, but she's Scotty Small's mom. And let's talk about Karen Allen. What did you think of her in this role?
She was exactly what she needed to be. She was delightful. I like how she, you know, backed up her son. She was a good mom. She cared about him. She took a marble to the head, no problem. She was good.
Are you an Indiana Jones guy?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
But that's I'm not agreeing or disagreeing.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, she's in that one. But she's also, and I believe this was her first acting role. I could fact check real quick. Yes, it sure was. Oh, wow. She was Katie in Animal House.
Oh, geez.
Love that movie. I also have not seen Animal House in at least a decade.
I thought that movie only had Belushi and Kevin Bacon in it. Hold on.
Nice. That's it for interesting facts. We're going to take a quick bathroom break. We'll be back on the other side with a clip from the movie and the full review.
Wait a minute, what are you doing, Don?
I need fuel.
Back in time, pod listeners. I want to tell you about a new partnership that we have. we've recently just partnered up with Bunny 17 Media, an independent publisher that is home to a variety of books, comic books, graphic novels, and more for children, teens, and adults. JD, tell our fans a little bit about what they have to offer.
Comic fans will love titles such as Scorn, the story of a teenage vigilante seeking revenge for his best friend's murder. Ouch. Blasto the Clown, an unlikely superhero whose powers come from a cursed enchilada. That one actually sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Twisted Magic, about a woman trapped between an unclear past and an uncontrollable future.
What about our fans that like don't read comic books, though?
Oh, dude. Comedy fans will enjoy Kevin Hates Everything, Brain Farts, Secondhand Boogers,
like Person's that.
Fade. Yeah. And How to Quit Being an Asshole in 5 Easy Steps.
Hold on. You're telling me there's a way for us to quit having you be an asshole all the time, and it's 5 easy steps?
Apparently.
And our listeners get like some type of discount with this, too?
Yes, but I'm staunch that you guys can't stop me from being an asshole in 5 steps. Bring it.
Awesome. So our listeners, go over to bunny17media.com. Use the promo code BACKINTIMEPOD. You get 15% off your entire order, only for our listeners. That's bunny17media.com, promo code BACKINTIME, and you get 15% off and support our podcast.
Hi guys, my name's Leenie.
And my name's Bunny.
We like chatty, occasionally funny British ladies talking about horror, true crime, and all things spooky. Could I suggest our podcast?
We round up every episode with a creepy and crappy pasta story, so you shouldn't be too bummed out by the time you finish.
You can find us on all the very best podcasting apps, hopefully.
And you can catch us on Twitter, we're at TalkSpooky. Hope to catch you soon. Love ya.
And I think that you're all right.
You mixed your weeds with your mama's toes, yeah!
Yeah!
You bought for apples in the toilet, and you like it. You play ball like a girl!
All right, we're back from the bathroom break. We're ready to dive into the review. Dave, you ready to go?
Yes, sir.
All right, awesome. So the movie begins with a voiceover from grown-up Scotty Smalls as he walks down the hallway in Los Angeles Dodger Stadium. He heads up to the press box, and I'm going to pause and hit the play button on the clip, and let's listen to the beginning of the film here.
There is one all-time greatest moment in the history of sports, and it happened in the 1932 World Series. The story goes that in the bottom of the ninth inning, with 2 outs, a full count, and the tying run on base, Babe Ruth raised his arm and pointed to the center field bleachers. No one believed it, because nobody had ever done it before, but the Babe was calling his shot. On the next pitch, the great Bambino hit a towering 400-foot home run. And even although he'd been a hero before that, that's pretty much how he became a legend. 30 years later, a kid named Benjamin Franklin Rodriguez became a neighborhood legend. It was in the greatest summer of my life when he taught me how to play baseball, and he became my best friend. And he got me out of the biggest pickle I'd ever be in.
So, Dave, what'd you think of the beginning scene here and the voiceover from Scotty Smalls?
Yeah, first and foremost, what an awesome voice. I mean, that guy was born to narrate, that's for sure.
Yeah, credit to the director-writer. Very talented on his voiceover work.
And then I love how it sets it up that you get a little bit of knowledge. Like, if you weren't too keen on Babe Ruth, you've learned a little bit about Babe Ruth.
Yeah, and that's something I can remember because of this movie. Going out to the field and playing ball, and out of nowhere before the pitcher would throw, I'd hold up the bat, point at the left, and then completely miss and whiff on the ball.
See, I thought you were going to say, you go point at the left, and then you just bunt the hell out of it.
I did used to do that, though. That worked really good.
Tricked everybody.
everybody would take a back step because they're like, oh, he's going to swing as hard as he can. But yep. There we go. We go back in time here. We get our first shot of Benny. He clocks a shot down the left field line and gets into a pickle. Ham stands up and yells, pickle! Benny scores and beats the pickle here. And we go to a neighborhood shot next. The guys are going to their prospective homes. A U-Haul truck sits outside of the house of Scotty Smalls. He waves to Benny, who gives him the old nose nod. Later that night, Scotty explains that his real dad had passed away and his mom had remarried. He says he and his stepdad were still trying to learn to get along. I'm fortunate that I never had to deal and adjust with like a step-parent. How about you, Dave? Do you have any insight on that?
Man, did you ask the question of all questions? Yes, sir. I actually, I grew up never knowing my dad, so I've been up through a few of those stepdad situations, and I am, in fact, a father and a stepfather myself, so
okay.
It can be one of those situations where you just gotta get through to each other and make it work, and sometimes it's awkward, you know, and so when sure. He talks about it, I think in this movie, like, Dennis Leary is a little more awkward than natural, but I think he does it well.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. So Bill, played by Dennis Leary, moves his ball on his mantle and straightens it out a little bit. It's signed by Babe Ruth. Now, just being a collector like I am, I grew up around sports card shops and stuff like that. Number one, you don't ever leave a ball like that out where somebody can grab it. And you certainly don't put your greasy fingers on it, especially when it's a ball signed by Babe Ruth. That's just one thing that drove me nuts. I'm like, don't touch it. What are you doing? Anyway. Next day, Scotty heads to the sandlot. He stands in the outfield hoping no one would see him. Scotty found out when they got there, they didn't pick sides. They didn't keep score, and they just played all day long. They only had 8 guys, so it wasn't enough for a full team, but if he would have known what would have happened next, he probably would have never gone. Scotty turns around in the outfield, and the fence rattles. We hear the sounds of what has to be a 10-foot dog, as loud as it is. Benny hits a fly ball to Scotty in the outfield. And all the guys yell to catch it, and he takes a couple steps backward, falls on his keister, and all the guys start laughing at him except for Benny. Scotty grabs the ball. Finally, after hearing some more noises from the fence, he tries to throw the ball, but it only goes about 3 feet. Again, the kids are all laughing at him. Now they're falling over laughing, and Scotty says, "My life is over," and he takes off running through the fence. Older Scotty, the voiceover, says, "If it weren't for Benny, I never would have made a single friend that summer." What'd you think of this scene?
Yeah, I like what's going on here because it sets it up that, you know, Benny is the strongest one of the group. He kind of holds everybody together. So when everybody else is out of line, he wastes no time. You know, he doesn't care what anybody thinks. He believes in, he sees something in him. You know, we don't know why or what it is yet, but he doesn't let anything fall to him. And you can see the beginning of that friendship building already.
Yeah, I want to say, I think it's super impressive for a 13-year-old kid to not laugh at somebody like that.
Right.
Because that would have been the easy thing to do, is just to pile on and laugh it up with your buddies. But I mean, he's got to be a very mature 13-year-old. And I wonder if that came from any of the real life stuff that the director pulled from, if this was a real guy. But we don't know. Maybe we got to have an interview with David Mickey Evans. Get him on the podcast.
Good. Yes, sir. Let's do it.
Knock at the door. It's Scotty's mom. She's met with a metal ball to the forehead from Scotty's erector set. We're going to talk more about the erector set later on in the episode. Scotty's mom, played by Karen Allen, probably best known for her role in the Indiana Jones franchise. We've already talked about her, but she's listed in the credits as just Mom. I thought that was strange that they didn't actually give her a name. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's not very normal, but I mean, especially for a character who has dialogue and some kind of emotional scenes.
Right.
But
and she's not a no-name actress either. So.
Right, but I mean, she's Mom, though, so I guess take it for what it's worth.
Good point. I love this next scene here. She encourages Smalls to get out of the house. She doesn't want him sitting around here fiddling with his erector set all summer like he did last year and the summer before. She encourages him to run around, jump fences, scrape your knees, get into trouble for God's sakes. Scotty calls himself an egghead, and his mom replies with, "You'll always be an egghead with an attitude like that." I love that. I'm going to use that on my own son. What do you think of this scene here with his mom?
Good scene, but it only works if, you know, the person actually calls themselves an egghead first.
Right. Scotty goes in the Bill's office the next day to ask him to play catch. and to teach him how. Bill says he will, but he's under the gun right now with work. His mom steps in and asks Bill to spare 30 minutes to teach him how. So they go into the yard. Bill tells him, now the key to the game is keep your eye on the ball. Wherever the ball goes, that's where your glove goes. Scotty misses the first throw. Instead of throwing it back, he runs it back to him. He also misses the second throw, which Bill says to himself, we're going to need a bigger glove. This time, he rolls the ball back, and then Bill says, Scotty, now keep your eye on the ball. Ah, my eye! Scotty goes running into the house with Bill, and Bill slaps a big old piece of steak on his eye and tells him to keep it on there for about an hour. It'll be black, but it's not going to swell. Got to watch out for the curve. What do you think of this scene here?
Okay, so two things. One, could he not have any emotion whatsoever? I mean, he nails this poor kid that, granted, he's already married the kid's mom, but geez, at some point, you still have to love the kid. I mean, but I get it. Maybe he's just trying to teach the kid to be tough. But then I've heard of this, you know, take a steak out, put it on there. But can you really put raw meat over your eyes without an infection or anything? Is that okay?
Glad you asked that because I kind of figured it might go that way. So I did a quick Google search beforehand. Okay. So here's the truth about it. Back in the day, because of 1960s, they really didn't have a bunch of ice. Like when you had a freezer, it was just a block of ice. So they couldn't really just like pull out an ice pack. So they would pull out the next best thing that was cold and that they could put on your face. And that was a steak. Now, in today's world, you would just use an ice pack because a steak carries a ton of bacteria and it's definitely not recommended to put over your face. Yeah.
I mean, he could have at least left it wrapped. Like he took all the wrapping off of it. I'm like, dude, I think it was already cold.
He's like, we just butchered this last week. Right on his face.
Put this on here. We'll hit the other one later.
There you go. Benny comes over to Scotty the next day to get him to come play. Scotty tells him he can't because, you know, I've got a broken glove. Benny says, ah, that's okay. I got an extra. Pulls one out of his back pocket. Scotty comes with him. The guys sit outside the local grocery store when Scotty meets them for the first time. Let's listen to a clip here of Scotty asking them who the great Bambino is.
Check this out.
I'm the Great Bambino!
What?
I'm the Great Bambino!
What?
I'm the Great Bambino. Oh.
Who's that? What?
I had no idea who they were talking about.
What did you say? What, were you born in a barn, man?
Yeah, what planet are you from?
But there was no way I could let them know.
You never heard of Sultan of Swat? The Titan of Terror. The Colossus of Clout?
The Colossus of Clout.
The King of Crash, man.
So? I lied.
Oh, yeah, the Great Bambino. Of course. I thought you said the Great Bambi. That wimpy deer? Yeah, I guess. Sorry.
But what do you think of this scene here where Scotty is totally clueless about who the Great Bambino is and does not put two and two together quite yet?
He really is not alone because I think even at this time, maybe knowing the name Babe Ruth, I did not know all the slang terms or all the alternative names that he would have. So the whole time I'm listening, like, hey, if he had been like, hey, Dave, who is the Colossus of Clout? I don't know. But
he had a lot of nicknames.
Yeah, whenever every baseball fan turns around and screams at you, you might as well just say Babe Ruth. You probably have a 50-50 shot right there.
Benny introduces Smalls to the entire team one by one. They all spit as Benny calls out their name. I thought that was hilarious. They go into the sandlot next. The guys are ripping on Smalls. They're making fun of how he can't play. Squint says he's an L7 weenie. Benny stands up, though, and he's got Smalls' back. I thought that was really cool how he chose not to bully Smalls. Benny tells him to go to left center. Small says, where's left center at? Benny just points to the area. And then one of the first things he does is he hits him a fly ball. Small falls on his butt again trying to catch it and runs it all the way back to the pitcher. And as he's running it in, Ham says, oh my God, I can't believe this. Smalls runs it all the way back in And then Benny runs out to talk to Smalls. Smalls tells him that he doesn't know how to throw. Benny tells him to stop thinking. This is baseball. You have to have fun. If you were having fun, you would have caught that ball. He shows him how to throw a ball. He tells him to tuck it like a paper route. And Smalls asks how to catch. And Benny says, put your glove up in the air. I'll take care of the rest. And Benny hits one a mile high and it lands perfectly in the air. Smalls catches it with his eyes closed and then throws it all the way back in. What'd you think of Smalls finally coming around on baseball?
Benny has got to be the greatest coach in the world at right. this point. But as unrealistic as it is, I thought that was one of the most memorable moments for me as a kid, is just remembering, like, man, he hit that ball right to him. Like, he can put that ball anywhere he wants. Mm-hmm. No pun intended. Yeah.
Next day, Ham does the Babe Ruth point where he calls his shot. De Nunes laughs at him and throws strike one. Ham tells him to give him something he can hit. De Nunes says, okay, here's my heater. I dare you to hit it. And Ham kind of whispers to himself, you'll be sorry. De Nunes throws. Ham hits it into the house behind the fence. Ham says, that's how you do it, Smalls. And they all hit him with their gloves, and they're pissed because now they can't play. They don't have a ball anymore. Smalls says, wait a second, I'll get it. Squinch yells, no. And they all run to Smalls to pull him off of the fence here. They tell him that he could have been killed. They tell him the game's over. We'll just have to wait till tomorrow to get a new ball. Benny tells Smalls to go to the fence very quietly. Peek through the fence. He looks in the fence and sees a giant dog paw, and it kind of smacks right on top of the ball. Smalls says, he got it. What was that thing? Camp out. And then we got the In the Jungle music playing next. What do you think of this scene here in our first small shot of the Beast?
Yeah, they set it up really well to be, you know, because this movie, like we said, you know, or I don't know if we said, you know, the time period is early 60s. I think you said 62, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And so right away, even throughout the course of this film, but definitely when it starts out, they build this like it's almost one of those 50s, 60s monster films. And yeah. So I love how we're first introduced to the Beast, because throughout the course of this movie, we see what maybe is their version of the Beast, you know, what they portray it as, which is always the monster is usually scarier than what it is. And I love that about the dog.
Yeah. This might be one of my favorite parts of the movie here. Smalls enters the treehouse. Ham wants to know if he would like a s'more. Smalls says, s'more what? No, a s'more. Well, how can I have some more of that if I haven't had anything? You're killing me, Smalls. And he has to explain what a s'more is, the graham cracker, the chocolate, the roasted mallow. Like I said, I actually have the t-shirt with that saying on it. It's one of my favorite lines. Also, if you're going to go camping, this is a must-have. Am I right, Dave? Have you ever gone camping and not eaten a s'more?
Negative. No, if you go camping, you need to roast on the campfire. There's no other except.
Squint says, be quiet. You want to wake it up? It just went to bed. And then Squints is going to tell a story here of his grandpa, Squigman Palidores, and his run-in with the Beast here. So I'm going to play another clip, and we'll be back on the other side here.
The legend of the Beast goes back a long time before any of us could even pick up a baseball. Back to a place called Myrtle's Acres. It all started about 20 years ago when thieves kept stealing junk from Myrtle's Acres junkyard. So Mr. Myrtle, the guy that used to own the place, got him this new pup from the dog pound. He fed him whole sides of beef, turned the pup loose in the junkyard, and the pup was grateful. And so, in a few weeks, the pup grew into the Beast, and he grew big, and he grew mean, so that he could protect the junkyard with only one thing on his mind. But after a while, the cops started getting phone calls from people reporting all the missing thieves.
the ones the beast had killed. It added up to about 120, 173 guys. It's true. They never found a single body, not one. Some people say they all got away, but we all know what really happened. The beast ate them. He ate them bone and all. The beast was too good at his guard dog job, so the police said he had to be retired. My grandpa, Squigman Palidores, was police chief back then. And he ordered Mr. Myrtle to turn his backyard into a fortress and chain up the beast and put him under the house where he could never get out to eat children and stuff. And that's where he's been for 20 years. And that's where he'll be for the rest of his life. Because when Mr. Myrtle asked the cops how long he had to keep the beast chained up like a slave, he said until forever.
I love the ending here where it's just Gwen's going forever. But what do you think of this scene here and the story from Squints?
I love it because you can kind of see that it's definitely a far-fetched tale, just like any campfire story that we tell. But there's got to be some base truth to the whole thing. And so we get an image of who we think Mr. Myrtle is going to be. We get a huge dog who we think is the beast behind there. And we are led to believe that it's bloodthirsty at this point, and it does its job so well that it's retired.
Smalls calls bullshit right away on the whole story. Squint says, oh yeah? Stick your head out that window and look down. So Smalls goes over, and we've got another voiceover from mature Scotty. And he says he learned that night that over 150 balls had gone over that fence, and not a single one of them have ever been retrieved. Next day, they've got a new baseball. Squints and Yaya come out of the drugstore, and we see Wendy Peppercorn for the first time. And she's walking down the street. Squints just stares at her and smiles. Yaya literally has to drag Squints all the way back to the sandlot. And at the sandlot, it's super hot. But I'm going to stop there for a second. What do you think of first impression of Wendy Peppercorn?
I remember as a kid, just thinking like the same thing any other 10-year-old probably thought, just like Squints did, like wowee. But I remember watching this again now. I was like, hey, who is that? I've seen her before. And so I had to do a little IMDb. And I was like, oh, she's from Sin City. Nice.
Yeah, that's a good catch.
Small part, but
I always go right to Wayne's World and I just go, swing, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
So they're back at the sandlot. It's super hot. Ham says, this pop isn't working, Benny. I'm baking like a toasted cheeser. It's so hot. Squint says, it's 150 degrees out there. We can't play baseball. Again, I love that Squints always over-exaggerates. Benny takes a vote to see if they want to play or not, and they all vote against playing. So he says, all right, then what are we going to do? And Yeah starts going, ooh, ooh, get pool ladies. And we're at the pool next. What'd you think of that scene here with Ham and the guys kind of turning on Benny, who doesn't care about the weather at all? He's going to play through it.
Yeah, and he's all decked out in jeans too, man. I don't know how he does it.
But, and a long sleeve shirt.
Oh yeah,
flannel.
Two things stand out to me. One is right whenever he says, "Let's take a vote." I noticed every one of the kids smiled. Because whether they were breaking character or not, they knew they had a way out because they were all going to vote together.
Right. And he tried to make it hard. He's like, you can't hack it, panty wearing mama's boy.
And they're like, yeah, no problem.
Where's the sister's bra? And they're just like, yep, that's me.
Nope. And then the other thing I was thinking was to hear how awkward Yaya's like, I mean, I totally saw that being more of a Squints move. But right. Then when he was doing that, I was like, how come he's not after Wendy? Because he's definitely, something's going on with him.
No, that's a funny scene. So we're at the pool next. This is why I love Ham in this movie. He's just strutting in front of these girls. Doesn't matter that he's this little chubby kid. He's just like, oh, hey, girls, I remember you. Oh, sexy. And then he flexes for him. He goes, hey, girls, and then blows him a kiss and just yells cannonball and just soaks them all. Scotty's voiceover.
Okay. Cannonball, doesn't he?
Yeah, he yells cannonball.
Oh, I thought he put his name in there. I thought he said Hammond Ball.
If he did, I've never caught that.
Okay.
That Dang it, I'm going to have to rewatch this now.
Sorry.
I'm going to be up all night. That'd be awesome. If he did call it the handball or Hammond ball, that's well done.
His voice cracks, so it's definitely hard to tell, but that's what I thought I heard.
So we got a voiceover from Scotty saying, they all went there to the pool for one reason. Wendy Preferkorn was the lifeguard. Squint says he swam here every summer of his adult life. And there she is, lotioning, oiling, oiling, lotion. And then Scotty's voiceover says, and then one day it became too much for Michael Squints Pelodorus. And he did the most desperate thing any of us had ever seen. Squints gets out of the pool and goes over to the diving board. Yeah, yeah, says, that's the deep end and Squints can't swim. He turns and looks at Wendy and then jumps right in the water. Wendy takes a second as the guy starts screaming and running toward him. She takes off her glasses and her whistle and all that stuff and dives in after him. She pulls him out of the water and starts to give him mouth to mouth. The guys say, come on, Squints, pull through, buddy. Bertram at one point says, oh, God, he looks like a dead fish. And then finally Squints turns at the guys and smiles and acts like he's dead again. And Wendy comes in for one more mouth to mouth and he grabs her by the back of the neck and kisses her. She calls him a pervert, drags him out of the pool, and tells him to stay out. Squint stops to look at Wendy on the outside of the pool, and she stares back, smiles, and waves at him. And Squint says he'd been planning it for years. How awesome was this scene?
To everybody that was his age, it was like the most Double Dare of all time.
Yeah, definitely. Big giant community pools, I guess, weren't really a thing in the 90s for me. We always had like family pools and stuff in our neighborhood, but had there been a really hot lifeguard named Wendy Preferkorn, I might have tried the same thing.
Yeah, I actually did go to the city pool a lot, and there never was, man. It was totally Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we even had a community pool. It's not like I grew up in like this rich neighborhood, very, very much working class, but we didn't have one. In the next scene here, it's the 4th of July. They all rush to the sandlot. And this is the one day of the year where there'll be enough light in the sky to allow them to play a night game. On their way to the field, Hamp stops to make himself a hot dog first. They go to the field, Benny hits a ball into the sky, and they all just sit there and watch in amazement as Benny rounds the bases and they watch the fireworks go off. And it kind of turns in from that night scene into the next day scene. And Benny's rounding the bases here as well. Hamp yells, pickle. And again, Benny beats the pickle and scores. And then we see some kids bike in on the sandlot. Squint yells, oh no! Ham throws his glove down and starts walking with purpose toward these kids. And that'll lead us to one of the greatest insult scenes in a movie in all time. So I'm going to play a clip here and let's listen to the scene here where these guys go back and forth.
Yeah, it's easy when you play with a bunch of rejects and a fat kid, Rodriguez.
Shut your mouth, Phillips.
Would you say crap face? I said you shouldn't even be allowed to touch a baseball. Except for Rodriguez, you're all an insult to the game. Come on! We'll take you on right here, right now! Come on! Yeah! You plan over your diamond, Porter. You ain't good enough to lick the dirt off our cleats.
Watch it, jerk.
Shut up, idiot.
Moron!
Scab eater. Butt sniffer. Yeah! Puss licker. Fart smeller. You eat dog crap for breakfast, geek.
You mixed your weeds with your mama's toe jam.
Yeah!
You bop for apples in the toilet, and you like it. You play ball like a girl.
Dave, what's your favorite insult here from this clip?
Man, I don't know. There's a few that had me rolling, but I think what caught me the most off guard is whenever he says something about being a fart sniffer, and then the Beltram guy's just like, he just makes notions of sniffing. I'm like, oh, man, he was all over that.
Yeah, that's really good back and forth. I remember watching the sequel, which God only knows why they decided to make a sequel 12 years later to this movie, and they try and do a similar scene, and it doesn't work at all. And it's so forced, and the jokes aren't as funny. And it's just like, this one just plays perfectly, this back and forth here. So anyway, because of the fight and Ham calling him a girl, basically, they set up a time to go play on their field tomorrow. Ham is still pissed as he walks back. And the next day, Ham yells, "Play ball! Hurry up, batter. I gotta get home for lunch." The next one, he says, "You know, if my dog was as ugly as you, I'd shave his butt, teach him to walk backwards." What do you think of the insults from Ham as the catcher here?
Class A. Like, I think anybody who would go up to bat could not hate him for how talented he is.
I love the one with the guy that he went back and forth with. He's like, "Hey, is that your sister in left field naked? She's naked." And he swings and misses. He's like, "Shut up." Like, "Hey, yeah, man, I'm just trying to have a friendly conversation. Think she'd go out with me?"
Yeah, I like it because he splits it up. Like, he's like, "Is she naked?" And then he waits a few minutes and he laughs. He's like, "She is naked." I'm just like, "What?" And then I had to double check the rating. I'm like, I've heard so many bad words and now naked references.
Yeah. They squeezed a lot into this PG-13 film.
PG?
Is it only PG? Holy smokes.
I think it's only PG, and I've heard everything except the F word, I think, at this point.
You are correct. I have the DVD right in front of me. PG.
I guess early 90s just had a little bit more
leeway there. We've got a montage next of the Sandlot kids just hitting balls all over the field. Clearly, they're the better team here. And then the last scene here is Benny hitting a grand slam to kind of cap it off. They're at a carnival next. Benny says, "It's on me tonight, guys." And as he hands them all their tickets, Bertram says, "Oh, I almost forgot. Chaw, the big chief, the best." Small says, "What do you do with it?" And Hamba again is like, "You're killing me, Smalls." They show him what to do with it. They all put a big dip in their mouth and they jump into one of those carnival rides that spins really fast in circles. They start off really excited. They're all having a good time. But as the ride goes on, they start feeling sick. You could really see it on their face. And eventually, one by one, they all start throwing up. We see puke flying everywhere. One girl comes off the ride screaming and covered with puke all over her shirt. Dave, two questions. I think you already answered this first one, but have you ever tried chewing tobacco?
I have not.
Okay. And have you ever thrown up on a ride like this?
Luckily, no, because I'm not a huge fan of them, but when I have decided to take them, I usually can hold it together.
Well done.
I will say, though, this reminds me a lot of another movie, I think, that came out a couple years later, Problem Child Part 2.
Ooh, love it.
Where there's another amusement park ride carnival where, and, you know, they don't have big chew, they just speed the ride up, but they start blowing chunks all over people, and I went right to that when I saw this scene. I was like, "Oh, there's two gross movies."
What's the name of the problem child kid? Oh, you remember his name?
Ooh. It's such a weird name, too. It's Junior, I think, right?
They just call him Junior. Yeah, you're right.
A weird name. No, I guess that's pretty normal.
Yeah, I remember that because Junior's the one that turns it up on, like, full speed, right?
Is it him or is it her? I think she's riding it.
Okay. And yeah, I thought she was riding it, and then he goes in the booth and is like, "I'll take over."
That's probably right. But yeah, he's definitely Junior because remember at the end of part one, "I'm here to see JR." No, that's me. It's Junior.
A couple days after the carnival incident, Scotty says they swore off the hard stuff and decided to stick the bazooka. But this was the day I got us all into the biggest pickle we'd ever been in. And it all started with an omen. We've got a shot here of Benny swinging and he literally busts the guts out of a baseball. Benny's pissed because he feels like he's kind of ruined the whole day and let everybody down. Small says he's got a ball lying around at home. And they're all like, "Well, go get it." So he goes to the house. He goes into Bill's office and he swipes the Babe Ruth signed baseball. Smalls races to the field with the ball. Benny tells him, "Great, your ball, your ups." I don't have the quote on here, but I know Ham also gives him crap while he's trying to hit, which I found hilarious. But Small smashes one out to center and clears the fence and hits a home run. So as he's running around, eventually he just stops and he's like, "Oh, no." And he walks over and stares at the fence. We can hear the dog growling in the background. Small says, "We got to get the ball back. You don't understand. That wasn't my ball." And we find out it was a present that someone had given to Bill. Squint says, "Where did your old man get that ball?" "Some old lady gave it to him. She even signed her name on it. Ruth. Baby Ruth." They're all like, "Babe Ruth?" And they all start charging the fence to go get the ball. Let's listen to a clip here. Listen to the guys telling Smalls who Babe Ruth is.
"He's got it. You're dead as a doornail, Smalls. You're dead as a doornail, Smalls. Smalls, you
mean to tell me that you went home and swiped a ball that was signed by Babe Ruth, and you brought it out here and actually played with it? And actually played with it?
Yeah! Yeah, but I was gonna bring it back!
But it was signed by Babe Ruth!
Yeah. You keep telling me that. Who is she?
What?
The Sultan of Swat!
The King of Crash!
The Colossus of Cloud!
The Colossus of Cloud!
Babe Ruth!
The Great Bambino!
Oh my god, you mean that's the same guy?
Yes! Smalls, Babe Ruth is the greatest baseball player that ever lived. I mean, people say he was less than a god, but more than a man. You know, like Hercules or something. That ball you just aced to the beast is worth, well, more than your whole life, man.
Oh, I don't feel so good.
What'd you think of this scene here, Dave, with the guys finally telling Smalls that the Sultan of SWAT, the King of Crash, is the same person as Babe Ruth?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, just kick a man while he's down. He already feels bad he lost the ball, but right. The guy does a good job, or the kid does a good job with really, you feel his pain. Like, you know that it's already bad, but when you see him, here he goes again. It's like carnival ride. The kid's about to be sick, and they start fanning him with the hats. I think at this point, we're barely approaching like an hour into the movie, maybe 45 minutes to the movie. And so we're just now getting into, quote unquote, the pickle. And the funny thing, too, is The Sandlot was the first time I'd ever heard the term a pickle being used as a reference for a problem.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Is that like a baseball thing, or was that maybe just a 1960s?
It is that, like, when you get into, that's what they call a pickle in baseball. Okay. When you're kind of stuck between a base and then they got the guy like on second, guy on third, and they're trying to like chase you down. They call that a pickle.
Well, so perfect. Okay.
There you go. Benny tells him, let's spread out and look for bottles. We need 98 cents to buy us a ball. So they're coming out of the hardware store next with the new ball. Benny signs it Babe Ruth. Smalls takes it back to the place and puts it back on the ball holder. And his mom enters and she's like, you know, Bill doesn't like you in here, but did he ever tell you about that ball? Yeah, signed by the greatest baseball player of all time, Babe Ruth. And Scotty's got voiceovers like, even my mom, a grown woman, knew who Babe Ruth was. Now, like I said earlier, I'm a big sports card collector. I looked this up just to kind of give you some frame of reference here. A signed Babe Ruth ball sold in 2012 for $388,000. So when Benny says, that ball you aced to the beast is worth more than your life, he might not be kidding. How crazy is that?
Well, yeah, and that was 1962, you know?
That's right. So, yeah, so that ball that sold for $388,000, that was in 2012. There's another one that sold in that time frame for, like, over $250,000. Not a lot of them out there.
And yet, this is not a ball you put in a glass case, of course. You just set it up on the shelf.
Sure, yeah, put your grubby fingers all over it and ruin it. Yeah, I'm not going to let that go ever. We have a montage next of the guys trying to get the ball back. The first plan of using a stick doesn't work. The beast eats the stick in half. They try an erector set next with a pan attached to it. The beast pulls it through the fence and bends it like a pretzel, throws it back over the fence. Then they have a vacuum fashioned catcher's mask. Squint says, initiate retrieval suction. The ball sucks into the mask and the beast comes running over. And as they're pulling it up, he bites it in half. Because the pipe is pinched, it shuts the vacuums up and they start shorting out. And it sounds like a bomb goes off in their clubhouse. My favorite part is Ham yelling, it's gonna blow! And he just falls backwards off the ladder. We see Timmy Timmons walk out of the treehouse and he's just covered in dust. And he says, they've underestimated the beast and they need an aerial attack. Yeah is hoisted up into the backyard next. Ham is lowering him with some type of bicycle contraption here. Yeah is right over the ball, and he grabs it, and he looks up, and he tells him to pull him up. And then as he looks up again, the beast is now standing over him, and they pull him up, and he drops the ball, and Yeah is screaming, What'd you think of this scene here with all these different attempts to get the ball back?
I thought it was really cool how each one of the kids got to kind of step out of their zone and do something a little more relative to the situation, where each one, you know, made an attempt to do something, or, you know, one kid gets blown up with the vacuum dust and whatnot. But man, yeah. That scene with Yeah pisses me off, because he had the ball. He could have just chunked it over the fence right there.
I know. All he had to do was just grab like, it and right throw away. It.
Maybe even the dog would have chased the ball and left him alone. I don't know.
Right.
But I hold you commendable, because the finger in the mouth, the blah, 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 reference, spot on. I loved it. When he did that, I was like, this kid is a quack, man. He's crazy.
So Scotty says, it's our last chance. He pulled out every piece of Erector Set that he had, and it finally becomes science versus nature. They begin to lower this car down the Erector Set tunnel down to the yard. He gets it right over to the ball, and Squint says, open catapult. Okay? Close catapult. The beast comes out of his doghouse, and Squint yells, ah, fire, fire, fire. Scotty hits the button. The baseball shoots up into the air. They're about ready to get it. The guys even pound their mitts because it's coming toward them. And the beast jumps through the air and grabs the ball and then destroys the Erector Set. So that's all they got. They're out of options at this point. Scotty's pretty, Smalls is pretty down in the dumps. What'd you think of their last attempt here with the Erector Set?
I love how he's able to bring into the play, like, what's helped keep them captive in his room all along. He finally brings outside. He puts his brains to it. He makes this contraption. I mean, it's damn near a flawless plan at this point. And when they launches the ball, you know, like you said, you can see it flying at you. You know it's not going to work, but you really hope it does. But, man, when that dog jumps up, it gives you this whole shark out of water scene. Like, the way they do the camera... Since it's right at the fence, you just see the dog hop up and snatch the ball. It looks like Jaws, man, coming out of the water. It's amazing.
Scotty on the voiceover says, Benny had a dream that night, and his dream was a lot more helpful than his was. His closet door opens, and Babe Ruth comes out of his closet and says, yeah, it's me. Legends never die, kid. And he's here to give him some advice. He tells Benny to just hop over there and get it. Benny says he can't. Can't go in that backyard. There's a beast over there. Giant gorilla dog thing that ate one kid already. Babe has him sit down on the bed, and he tells him, everyone gets one chance to do something great. Don't let it pass you by. And he stands up, and he's got a baseball card in his hand. He says, Henry Aaron. I don't know why, but can I have this? Dave, do you happen to know the significance behind the Henry Aaron card?
Only because I did my research. Otherwise, I would not have. But knowing what I know now... And I'll let you give the details to that. I was like, you just screwed him out of some money.
Yes, Henry Aaron, for our non-baseball guys, also known as Hammerin' Hank Aaron, became the all-time home run leader when he passed Babe Ruth's record of 714 career home runs. Hank Aaron ended up with 755, only to be surpassed in the early 2000s by Barry Bonds. But many do not count that record, as he's been a known steroid user. So we still consider Hammer and Hank Aaron the home run king. Benny taps on Small's window next. He tells him it's time to meet him at the Sandlot. He had a dream. He pulls out a pair of PF Flyers, the secret weapon. Shoes guaranteed to make a kid run faster and jump higher. Smalls tells him it's not his fault. He doesn't have to do this. Benny says, yeah, I do, Smalls. I have to do this. He climbs a car and steps on the fence and hops over to the other side. The dog comes out of the doghouse with a ball in his mouth. He drops the ball right in front of him and Benny, about halfway in between. I love the music here. It's like a good old-fashioned standoff in a Western movie. And then Benny just takes off to get the ball. He slides, grabs it, runs back to the fence, and jumps over it. But in the race back to the fence, the dog's chain breaks, and he also jumps the fence. And Benny just yells, oh, shit. And we see Benny running all over the downtown area. He jumps a car. They run through a back alley. They go to a movie theater. The dog jumps right through the middle of the screen. Benny gets outside and goes through a picnic in the park. They're jumping on top of the tables. Benny goes over the top of a giant, like, four-layer cake. The dog goes under the cake and also hits a clown on stilts, who starts stumbling backwards and, whoa, 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 and lands on the table. And the cake that just got sat down is now in the air and flying on top of their heads. They go through the pool next, and then Benny runs past the Sandlot guys and says, Sandlot, Sandlot, let's go. They beat Benny back to the Sandlot. They took a shortcut, and he finally comes running in with the dog following behind him, literally nipping at his heels. Benny runs to the fence one more time and jumps it. The dog tries to go through the fence, but as he does, the fence comes crashing down on top of him and makes a thunderous crash. Real quick, Dave, what do you think of the chase scene here?
I remember it lasting a lot longer when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Now, something that stands out more to me now was the fact that they were watching the Wolfman. I was like, how awesome. But then I noticed the audience, those kids were like 6 or 7 years old. Like,
they did seem young. Yeah.
I was like, what the hell's going on? I didn't even watch it till I was at least 9. Come on.
Yeah.
But that's a good catch, though. I think one thing that was pretty amazing is great stunt work. The guy who plays Benny and jumps off the top and just does a flip and lands on his back. Oh, man.
Well done.
Yes.
Smalls walks over to the fence and we hear the dog whimpering as the fence is laying on top of him. He tells the guys to help, but they won't. He turns to Benny, who of course comes over and help. He just can't help be the hero. And they lift the fence and the dog runs out. And they drop the fence down and Smalls turns around and the dog is right in his face. And they're all worried and it's kind of tension. And then the dog just starts licking him in the face. And he seems really friendly. How about that for a twist?
Yeah, I also remember when you first see the dog chase Benny, there's kind of like this like, oh, he's not 10 feet.
I know.
But then he's still a big dog. So, and he's fast. He's on, I mean, Benny's like the fastest kid out of the group and the dog is hot on his trail the whole time. So it's believable. And even the scene, like Benny, right before he clears the fence, he does get snipped in the butt a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, this dog, I guess at this point is just playing because he's running from him. But man, when you see Smalls, who is small, just face to face with this dog whose head is about as big as his torso, and then he just covers him in a shower, you're just like, aw, he's a good doggy.
Yeah, this could have all been avoided. In fact, the dog goes over and is like, hey guys, check out all the balls I've been keeping for you. What took you so long? Starts digging them all up, and in the background we can hear Benny says, now we can play forever. Smalls and Benny reluctantly go over to the door of the house and they knock. And Mr. James Earl Jones comes out playing Mr. Myrtle. They explain they hit a ball over the fence and had to get it. Mr. Myrtle says, that's the first time anyone ever got the best of old Hercules. Why didn't you just knock? I'd have gotten it for you. All the guys start hitting squints. Mr. Myrtle invites the two inside, and he's got the Babe Ruth ball in his hand as he goes inside here. What do you think of the first impression here of Mr. Myrtle?
Again, he comes off as an imposing character, and then boom, just twist of fate, man. He cracks a good laugh. He's got a good smile, and he welcomes him in. And he, you know, he's holding the baseball in his hand, and you know what he's thinking already. Just like, this feels gross. This ball is probably ruined. And man, I just think it's really cool because he just lets the cat out of the bag. He's like, I'd have got the ball for you. And at that point, I mean, that kid is there. Like you said, man, he's exaggerating everything.
Mm-hmm. So Mr. Myrtle says, you're in some trouble, aren't you, son? Small says, yeah, that's signed by Babe Ruth. Mr. Myrtle says, George, he signed this? I take it back. You're dead where you stand. He goes over to his baseball case and he starts kind of feeling around in there. It's worth noting here, if you haven't seen this movie in a long time, Mr. Myrtle's blind. So that's why he's kind of feeling around. He grabs a ball out of the case and he suggests a trade. Then he says, thanks, but you know, that ball really is signed by Babe Ruth. Mr. Myrtle smiles and says, yeah, well, so is this one and the rest of the 1927 Yankees. Now, for historical info here, the 27 Yankees were the American League and World Series champions that year. That's also the year Babe Ruth became the first ever player to hit 60 home runs in a season. And that lineup, which also had Lou Gehrig, was so stacked that they earned the nickname Murderer's Row. So Benny grabs the ball and starts naming off all the players. Small says, why would you trade me? Mine's all chewed up. And Smalls walks over to the case and looks at a photo on the wall. He says, you knew Babe Ruth? George? Yeah, he was almost as good a hitter as I was. Used to crowd the plate so the strike zone would disappear. Pitchers hate me. That's the way I played 100% of the time. Baseball was light. Until one day a high fastball, boom, lights went out. He makes him a deal. He said, you guys come by once a week to talk baseball, and you take the ball. It's an even trade. And that's all they have to do. And they obviously agreed to do it. What'd you think of Mr. Myrtle? I thought this was a pretty amazing gesture because that ball, geez, Babe Ruth's ball goes for $388. I mean, this has to be a $500,000 baseball.
Yeah, and I think it shows his character, and then also just kind of, I guess they say, like, wisdom with old age, because I guess you value different things in life, and like he says, he's like, I got a whole room of stuff. Like, right. I'm sure he had another one, you know, but the fact that he just knew what that kid has probably gone through, you know, to get the ball, but also what it means to his dad, and so he knows by giving the ball, he's bailing that kid out of a world of just trouble or beating himself up over it, but also right. he's probably repairing a father-son relationship too. I looked into it a little more, but when I thought about it, I was like, man, he's a really good dude.
Yeah. So the next scene, Scotty says, Bill was pretty mad about me swiping his Babe Ruth ball, but he wasn't that upset when I showed him the Murderer's Row ball. So he grounded him for 1 week. That was it. Not bad for ruining a Babe Ruth baseball. He said he never had another issue calling Bill dad after that. He says no other summer ever quite matched up to that one. And when guys moved away, we didn't replace them. We just kept playing. Scotty explains what happened to the guys one by one here. Let's listen to a clip of what ends up happening to all the Sandlot guys here.
Guys over the years, and I found out that Yaya's parents shipped them off to military school. After the Army, he became one of the pioneering developers of bungee jumping. Of course, we all know why. Bertram got really into the 60s, and no one ever saw him again. Timmy and Tommy became an architect and a contractor. They started out small, designing playground equipment and prefabricated tree houses. But they became multimillionaires when they invented mini malls. Squints grew up and married Wendy Peffercorn. They have 9 kids. They bought Vincent's drugstore and they still own it to this day. Hamilton Porter became a professional wrestler. You know him as the Great Hambino. De Nunes played AAA ball, but he never got to the majors. He owns his own business now, and he coaches a little league team that his sons play on, called the Heaters. Hercules lived to be 199 years old, in doggy years. I was the last one to move away, but when I did, the Sandlot was still there. After Benny pickled the beast, his reputation spread all over town. From then on, he was known as Benny the Jet Rodriguez. And the nickname stuck with him for the rest of his life.
Dave, what'd you think of the scene here with, or I guess the voiceover of what happens to all the guys? What were some of your favorites?
I think it's so cool that they just wrote that in there anyway. Some movies just kind of end and you don't really get anything out of it. And this one, you kind of like, no need for a sequel later, but that's beside the point. You figure out, you know, the direction each one goes. And I feel like everybody, for the most part, got a pretty outstanding future. Right. Of course, there's the one odd one of he got really into the 60s and no one saw him again. And I'm like, either he was really far out, man, or he did too much and he's not with us, man. So I didn't know what to think of that one. But all the other ones, I was 9 kids. Did she still wear the lifeguard uniform? I don't know. But beside the point, I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, one thing I saw that was, it's an interesting tie-in. I kind of saved it for now. The kid that plays Bertram, that got really into the 60s, actually played in a TV show years later called The 60s. How cool is that?
It's like, there's no way they could have known that.
Right. Awesome. There's no way. I mean, it was literally 10 years later.
He took it upon himself to tie up the loose end.
Yeah. And then also Ham becoming a professional wrestler known as the Great Hambino. How that didn't get turned into a movie, I would love an answer. Because that should be a movie.
Nacho Libre.
He's just like, play ball! I mean, let's wrestle! Yeah, that would be awesome sequel there. Now, Scotty says the last one to move away, Benny, became a legend, and the nickname Benny the Jet Rodriguez stuck with him. Let's listen to one more clip of the ending of the film here.
Jets lost a step or two. I wouldn't be surprised to see some fireworks here. The Jets got a suicide lead. And there he goes! He's stealing home! They don't see him! I don't believe it! He's stealing home! He's stealing home! They don't see him! I don't believe it! They don't see him! The bench! There's a
The Jets stole home. The Jets stole home. Dave, what'd you think of the end of the movie here?
I loved it. I mean, just showing Benny reach that all-time goal. Because even in the scene where they're doing the 4th of July and he hits the ball up into the air and all the other kids are mesmerized by the fireworks, you kind of see him run, like you said, running the bases. And I saw that as just kind of like telling the story of like he's running through his life. Like he's going to be doing this. He's going to make it because he's focused, you know.
Yeah.
And finally seeing him just play in the major leagues was very satisfying. And again, there he is, you know, defeating another pickle, so to speak. He's still home.
Yeah, and I love the fact that Scotty becomes an announcer and he mentions as the scene goes on, you know, Benny's lost a step or two, you know, so this must be like the end of his career. And I take it that he's become like a big star too. But yeah, then he steals home and then on his way out, you know, like he celebrates with all his team. They all go in the dugout. Benny comes back out to give Scotty the thumbs up. And it's just like, we did it, man. And that's how the movie ends. I have to say, this is probably my favorite baseball movie of all time. I know there's a lot of really good ones out there, but like I said, this really put me in the baseball mood. I'm ready to watch some games now. But what are your final thoughts on the movie? And I know you said it had been about a decade since you last watched it. What'd you think?
I got to be honest, man. I didn't own a copy. So when I knew we were doing this, I was like, eh, I'll just rent it. No big deal. So I dug around until I found the best and, you know, least costly way of renting it digitally. And then after I did, I was like, you know, I'd have bought it, man. That was a lot better than I knew I would like it. Like I've always liked the movie, but then just tenderhearted, I was like, man, I would watch that again. You know, mm-hmm. I might as well have just spent the extra $5 and bought it. But nonetheless, man, I really, really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was very well written. And I think I'm shocked to know that it wasn't a Disney movie. You know, I think wasn't it like a
20th Century Fox?
And this thing has Disney all over it, but you know, well, I was tricked.
As fate would have it, it very well could be Disney property by the end of the year.
Oh, okay. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, with 20th Century Fox is being bought out by Disney for like a crazy amount of money. So, yeah, they would own the rights to the Sandlot franchise. That would be interesting.
Maybe they'll give us another one and they'll bring back all the original members. That'd be awesome. That'd be like
Sandlot the reunion.
Oh, do it. Let's Kickstarter this thing.
There we go. Now, we're going to be back next week with another episode of the Back in Time podcast. In the meantime, please subscribe to the show on iTunes. And while you're there, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. You can follow Dave at Phantom Dark Dave on Twitter. His podcast comes out every week. It's called Dave's Pop Culture. Give him a subscribe and follow him on social media as well. He's also part of our friends at Black Cat Shadow podcast. Subscribe to them on iTunes. For now, it's that time of the episode where we climb back into the DeLorean, punch in today's date, and return back to present day. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on Monday.
This means your future hasn't been written yet. No one's has. Your future is whatever you make it. So make it a good one. Both of you.